Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
I was at the Rose Bowl in Pasadena, and I was watching Ohio State dismantle Oregon, and I looked over my shoulder, and I saw our next guest, Bill Rabinowitz, sitting in the press box, and I said to myself, I got to go talk to him. But before I knew it, it was 34-0, and there was a lot to do in Pasadena. Bill Rabinowitz joining us now. What was that like for you to watch Ohio State do that to Oregon?
I was as surprised as most people were. I did think there was a chance that Ohio State could blow them out. I did. I thought it was maybe a 10% chance, but not like that. I didn't think it'd be like utter annihilation like we saw in the first, 28 minutes of that game. That was as close to perfection as you're going to find. It reminded me, as an Ohio State beat writer, of the 2014 Big Ten Championship game against Wisconsin with 59-0 in Cardale Jones's starting debut, and that's what propelled them into the playoff, which they won against Oregon, of course, in the finals. That was the closest I could recall. And what was so kind of stunning about it was, first of all, the opponent's really good. I mean, Wisconsin in 14 was good, but they weren't number one. They weren't undefeated. And to see Ohio State just, as you said, dismantle a very good team was pretty stunning.
And again, we're talking to Bill Rabinowitz, Columbus Dispatch. He covers Ohio State. He is the best on that beat. But you brought up that Cardale Jones, Ezekiel Elliott team, and yeah, there is a similar feel. That team was not the best team during the regular season, but by the end of the year, everybody was looking at that Ohio State team saying, gosh, they peaked. Nobody wanted to play him. Oregon got him, unfortunately, in the title game. But did you see this pivot coming? Let's go back to Michigan. Lose to Michigan. What happens after that?
Well, they had a big team meeting, and you know, the details of it are kind of sketchy, but it was apparently quite heated. Quite honest. They just unburdened themselves, and whatever grievances any of the players may have had, they aired them. And by the end of that meeting, however long it took, they were united. And really, they had to come to a decision. It was a fork in the road. It was, we lost to Michigan. We're not going to win the Big Ten. Our season's doomed. Let's just mail it in, kind of. Or it was, we've got one thing left, the biggest of all, and let's put aside whatever issues we may have. I mean, I have no idea what they are, but let's just be united and let's show the world what we can do. And that's obviously the path they chose. I mean, everyone going into the Tennessee game was a mystery. Which Ohio State team would show up? Well, we saw that which team, and that team took an even bigger jump against Oregon.
I am now looking at the opponent for this round's game, and it's going to be Texas. I can't unsee what I saw at the Rose Bowl. I mean, does it feel to you like Ohio State just has it humming? And Chip Kelly and the defensive coordinator at Ohio State, they're in rhythm. And is there something going on coaching-wise in your estimation?
Yeah, there is. I mean, Jim Knowles' defense has played very, very well in every game this year except for one, the first Oregon game. And that one was kind of like Denzel Burke, first of all, had a horrible game. The cornerback had a horrible game. And they had a hard time getting lined up. I mean, they just were just off balance in that game. Other than that, though, I don't even know how many games it is now. What, 14? 13? 14? Whatever it is. They've been pretty much lights out. It's the best defense in the country statistically. And sometimes, you know, numbers can lie. I don't think the numbers are lying. This is a defense that really does not have any flaws, does not have any holes. The one thing you see is the one area of vulnerability might be the cornerbacks because, you know, Denzel Burke had the terrible game against Oregon, although he's a good player. And Davis Igbinosin is prone to getting pass interference calls. Other than that, where's the weakness? You know, they don't have one. Caleb Downs is such an eraser back at safety that you watch him and he just jumps to the ball. It's like he just moves at a different speed, it seems like, than anyone else does. So on defense, they're very good. On offense, once they kind of realize who they are, and who they are is an explosive team. Just get the ball to the playmakers. Don't get cute. Don't run into a brick wall like they did against Michigan. It was a great game plan. It was beautifully executed against Oregon.
Yeah, and I felt a real mismatch with Chip Kelly game planning against Tosh Lapoy on the other side. You got a really good strategist against a good recruiter. And I actually think Ohio State had some of the better players, a lot of the better players in that game as well. Bill Rabinowitz is with us. Is the Chip Kelly thing sustainable? I mean, does Chip stay there and ride it out? Or do you get the impression that there's a season for this and you know, he goes off to another head coaching job or maybe a coordinator job in the NFL?
I haven't talked to him about it, so I don't know. But my sense is that he's quite happy at Ohio State. I think he's very happy to be the play caller and the guy working with Ryan Day, his protege. I don't think he has an itch to be a head coach again and deal with all the stuff a head coach has to deal with in college football now. I don't know that an NFL team would hire him as their head coach, given the lack of success he had in the NFL. But is it appealing for him to be a coordinator at the NFL level? I don't know, maybe. But I do think he seems very happy here in Columbus. You know, he's a ball coach. You know, that's what he is at heart. And to not have to deal with the stuff that a head coach has to deal with, I think has been liberating for him.
Bill, the matchup with Texas, how do these teams match up in your estimation in the Cotton Bowl?
Well, Texas is a really good defense, one of the best in the country, one that's similar to Ohio State, very strong in the back end. And I thought that was kind of a weakness for Oregon. They have very athletic guys, but they weren't real big. And we saw what Jeremiah Smith and Emeka Ibuka can do as big physical receivers. Texas matches up better against that style. The problem for Texas is their offense is so inconsistent. Their run game is so inconsistent. And Quinn Ewers has been very good, but I don't think he's been elite. I mean, I think if you were to ask Ohio State, would you rather go against Dillon Gabriel or Quinn Ewers, they'd probably say Quinn Ewers. I mean, this is just my layman's view of it. I haven't seen Texas a whole lot, but it seems to me when he gets pressured, his fundamentals kind of fall apart a little bit. He throws off his back foot. You know, he's got a great arm. I mean, he can make some throws and make you go, wow. But can they do it consistently for 60 minutes? That's my question about Texas. Yes, they can play with Ohio State, but in the games I've seen, they haven't been consistent enough to do it for 60 minutes. If they do, then this will be a game that goes down the wire.
When you look at the playoff, I mean, of course, people in the state of Oregon are talking about seeding problems.
Right,
number one seed probably shouldn't have been at a neutral site in their first game. What would you change about this tournament, Bill, if the committee let you in and let you give some input?
Well, surprisingly, they haven't. I'm not slamming Boise or Arizona State, but nobody thought they were the third and fourth best teams in the country. They're not. And so for Oregon as a number one seed to have to play Ohio State in the first playoff game, that was unfair to Oregon. Let's just face it. And that felt like more of a national championship game than it was a quarterfinal. So I would remove the seeding part of the four champions, or you know, I guess five really champions, and just seed them the way they are seeded. Yes, that those teams get in for sure. Boise gets in for sure. Boise, I think, would have been anyway. But Arizona State gets in as a Big 12 champion, but not necessarily as a number four seed or some kind of guideline where if they're not close to being one of the top four teams, then they don't get to be a four seed and get the bye. But look, those byes didn't help those teams, did they? All of them lost, every one of them.
Yeah, every one of those conference champions lost too. And here's an idea we were kicking around, Bill, that I agree with you. Just seed them 1 through 12. But let's reward the conference champions and tell them, hey, look, you get to host a first-round game. So Penn State would have, you know, conceivably, if they played in a first round, had to go and play on the blue turf like the NFL does.
Right.
Where,
right.
You know, your record's not as good, but you got the home field. How do you feel about home field advantage in multiple rounds of the tournament maybe being held on campuses?
Yeah, I'm fine with that. I mean, the atmosphere at the Ohio State-Tennessee game was great. I mean, it's well documented that Tennessee had a huge throng of fans there, more than I've ever seen from a visiting team at the Horseshoe, and it added to it. It was great. I felt bad for him after about 10 minutes because the game was over. But, yeah, I think college is meant to be played at home sites. You know, the issue, of course, is the Bowls still kind of want their cut at the apple, right, their bite at the apple. And so we're going to the Cotton Bowl this week, and they're only there for 2 or 3 days. I think Ohio State's not even sure it is the Cotton Bowl. It's just another, you know, it's just a semifinal to them. It's at the Cotton Bowl. And so I think the Bowls still want to have a part in this, but at the Rose Bowl, there were no festivities like we're used to seeing there, like the whole week where you're there and you go to Disneyland, all that kind of extra stuff has gone by the wayside.
Bill Rabinowitz, Columbus Dispatch with us. I mean, it feels like this is Ohio State's tournament to lose. What are people in Columbus, what are Ohio State fans thinking as they kind of look at Texas and then maybe the possibility of either Penn State or Notre Dame in the title game?
Yeah, I always hesitate to speak for fans because I try to not, yeah. I try not to, you know, keep it separate from what I do. I think that there is a feeling now, though. Look, the mood around town after the Michigan game was one of disbelief and anger and everything else you can imagine. Now it's like, oh, this is the team we thought we were going to have. This is great. Let's win it all. So I think that, you know, there's a small segment of Ohio State fans that will always think that you can't have a successful season without beating Michigan, that this national championship will have some sort of asterisk in their mind. But I think the vast majority of fans are just along for the ride and excited and thrilled at what they've seen for the last two games. I mean, what's the 83 to 20, 38 or something, they've outscored teams, and they've jumped on Tennessee 21-0 quickly, on Oregon 34-0. It's like, oh man, this is the team we thought we were going to have, but even better.
Does Penn State or Notre Dame present the more interesting challenge in your mind?
I think Notre Dame probably does because, first of all, it's a different team. You know, Ohio State hasn't played them. Penn State's offense has gotten better. They've gotten more explosive. Now, whether the explosiveness we saw against Oregon in the Big Ten Championship game was a reflection of Oregon's defense or not, I'm not sure. But they're more explosive than they were when Ohio State played them on November 2nd. Notre Dame, I think, is a really, really solid team. The only thing that gives me pause about their chances of beating Ohio State is they're just not very explosive on offense. And it's hard for me to see in a 60-minute game, you know, Ohio State's going to get some plays. They're going to make some plays. Notre Dame's really good. I mean, I don't expect Ohio State to put, you know, 40 on them. But can Notre Dame throw the ball down the field? Can they run the ball if they can't loosen up Ohio State's defense? I don't know about that. You know, I think Ohio State is deservedly the favorite in this, but I don't think anyone's starting to make parade plans just yet.
Ryan Day, there were so many calls for, you know, he should be fired and this
right.
isn't working. And now, you know, I see him out this week and he's talking a little bit about, hey, I was more involved in the game plan the last few weeks. And I find that interesting. But where does he stand right now? I mean, is all well after those two wins?
You're only as good as your last game here in Columbus. I've always felt like most of the fan base has been behind him. Now, after the Michigan game, that certainly changed. And I think if they had laid an egg against Tennessee, that it would have been borderline untenable. I don't think that the administration, that Ross Bjork, was ever inclined to let him go for a number of reasons. One, there's a significant buyout. The other is they think he's doing a really good job, that you don't want to make a knee-jerk reaction. I wrote this after the Michigan game, that every program in the country now is a house of cards with the transfer portal and NIL. It just is. Players can, you know, if Ryan Day was not the head coach at Ohio State next year, would Jeremiah Smith stay? Would Caleb Downs stay? Would Julian Sayin, who's the heir apparent at quarterback, would he stay? You're starting from scratch. And I think that Ross Bjork recognizes that Ohio State has a strong foundation. They have a strong culture. And as disappointing as the Michigan loss was, and as upsetting and inexcusable as the way they played was, you know, you don't throw everything away because of one bad day. Because then you're looking at a situation where maybe Ohio State finally has the dip that they alone have avoided, and never having consecutive losing seasons for a century. I mean, maybe, I'm not saying they would collapse to that degree, but I think if Ryan Day was not there and you had to hire a new coach Who knows what the roster would look like next year? Who knows how successful that coach would be? You know what Ryan Day is. I mean, you can complain about losing to Michigan four straight years. That's fine. But the program's not broken. And you know, you change coaches, who knows what can happen.
I also think, you know, everybody's concerned about revenue sharing. Like, do you really want to pay Ryan Day and assistant coaches and have that extra expense on the books? What would it have cost them if they had listened to fans?
I think $37 million.
That's a lot of money.
Something like that.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money, plus assistant coaches who are under contract. And there's no Urban Meyer out there like there was in 2011. There's no guy that's an obvious choice that you say, okay, that should be the next Ohio State coach. I have no idea who the coach would be. I mean, part of the fan base was clamoring for Mike Vrabel. Mike Vrabel, I don't think, is coming to coach at Ohio State. So, you know, who would it be? I have no idea. But I don't think it's going to be an issue unless Ryan Day decides at the end of this year, I've had enough. I mean, it's, you know, coaching at Ohio State's like dog years. I mean, a season coaching at Ohio State's like a dog year, and it can age you. And so I would understand if he would say, you know, he would hate this comparison. I'll pull a Harbaugh. You know, I mean, that might be a reason that he would stay, so he wouldn't be accused of pulling a Harbaugh.
I really want to lean on you here, and this is my last question. You know, Oregon fans are frustrated with Lanning, the assistant coaches,
the coordinators.
What advice, Bill? What advice do you give to Oregon after getting boat raced like that?
A couple things. One, every team can have a bad day. I mean, he said it after the game. Look, Ohio State had their bad day against Michigan. We had our bad day tonight. The foundation of Oregon's program is really strong. They have Phil Knight money. They have recruited at a very high level. I think Dan Lanning is a very creative coach. He seems to know what he's doing. I think that Oregon is built to last, and to change coaches again would be a mistake. I mean, I'm not trying to give Oregon advice, you know, but it's not broken. You know, they went 13-1. It's not broken. And so you're going to have bad days. There are 130 teams that play Division I college football. Only one of them is going to win it all. Only one. And Oregon was the only undefeated team in the regular season, which should count for something. So I understand Oregon's disappointment. As an Oregon fan, I could imagine watching that game would have been like a nightmare. And I have a friend who listens to your show regularly, Rachel, who was despondent in the second quarter of that game. But, you know, sometimes you have to throw up your hands and say, it ain't our day. You know, it ain't our day. And it wasn't Oregon's day. But that doesn't mean that the program is broken or that they should make major changes.
All right. I like Ohio State over Texas. Have you made a pick yet?
I did. I think we actually had to do it before the Oregon game, just, you know, in case they won. You know, I think they'll win fairly comfortably. I forget what my score was, but, you know, 10, 14 points, you know, I don't think it'll be a blowout necessarily, but you know, Texas could win. If Ohio State doesn't play well, Texas could certainly win.
I don't see it. I just don't see it. I think the SEC and, you know, I look at the scores of those games and the way those teams played. I think Ohio State's battle-tested, but Bill, you do a great job. I appreciate you joining us. You've been so kind to us, and we'll see you down the road.
Sounds good. Thanks. Always nice to be on, John.
And there he goes, Bill Rabinowitz, Columbus Dispatch. And by the way, for people, I'll give you a little backstory on that. Bill, and this happens whenever I travel too. There's some issue that goes on at home. But Bill was waiting for an exterminator. So I was listening for the ding-dong in the background because his wife reported that he was at the Rose Bowl that she saw a mouse in their house. And so she has been afraid to go into the kitchen or go into other parts of the house and has been sequestered, I guess, in their upstairs until the exterminator could get over. So I appreciate Bill joining us and giving us some of his time. Not a Mickey Mouse football team, though, that he's covering. Ohio State looked fantastic against Oregon. I love what he had to say about patience, staying the course. I don't think anybody needs to be fired, but I would like to see Oregon bring in some coordinators or consultants or an assistant. They need more gray hair. They need some guys that are a little seasoned, maybe some guys that aren't into recruiting. Oregon has a ton of money. It's investing in recruiting and facilities and infrastructure. Needs to invest in coaches as well. Leave it here. Some parting thoughts coming up. You got the bald-faced truth.